Good evening, church. Just like Pastor Cindy said, in 2 weeks' time, we're going to enter into Good Friday and Easter weekend, and the pastoral team have brainstormed and talked among ourselves that we should do a series like this, The Day We Met, Part 2, focusing on the people and the groups of people that Jesus met before he went to the cross and also after. So if you count last week would be the first week, sort of. This week and next week, those 3 weeks would be talking about people that Jesus met before he went to the cross. And then after the Good Friday, we're going to spend 2 weeks looking at people that Jesus met after he was resurrected. And so let's pick it up. Last week, we were at the upper room. Jesus had his dialogue with his disciples, talking about love, talking about serving, talking about washing feet. And so today, we're going to look at a different people group. We're going to look at his final encounter with the chief priests and the Pharisees. The chief priests and the Pharisees, or, you know, sometimes people call them the Jewish officials or Jewish authorities or the Jewish leaders. And those in particular are people that oppose Jesus. So let's pick up from where we were last week. Jesus had his final supper with his disciples, and he washed the feet of his disciples, and he told them that he's going to go away. And as he was going and he was sharing with his disciples all of his final words, they were walking to this garden called Gethsemane, where Jesus usually spends his evening time praying. And it was there that the chief priests and the Pharisees found him. They arrested him and brought him to the high priest for trial. The high priest and the authorities and the Jewish leaders, they conducted this trial secretly in the nighttime without anybody else there. And so they made up some false charges against him, and they sent him to the Roman governor to be executed. And so they sent him to the governor's headquarters. The governor was Pilate. Pilate saw them and asked them, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" And the Jewish leader said, "If this man were not doing evil, we wouldn't have delivered him over to you." And Pilate said to him, "Take him yourself. You judge him by your own law." To which the Jews said, "It's not lawful for us to put anybody to death." And so Pilate, he sensed that this is a serious matter. So he went into the headquarters, he took Jesus with him, and he questioned Jesus. But he found nothing wrong. He found no guilt in Jesus. So he intends to release him. And so he went outside back to the leaders and he told them, "I find no guilt in him. Now you all have a custom that I should release one man for you at this time. Do you want me to release him, your king?" The Jews cried out, "Not this man, but Barabbas." Barabbas. Barabbas was a robber. He was a murderer and a rebel. They want him instead. And so Pilate, at this time, he's trying to appease the Jews and de-escalate the situation. So Pilate ordered Jesus to be beaten. Perhaps, he thinks, perhaps if I beat this man, that would satisfy their anger. But every time the chief priests saw Jesus, their response was the same. Same violent and bloodthirsty response. "Crucify him! Crucify him! Away with him! Away with him! Take him away! Kill him! Get rid of him!" That was their final encounter. Now we have to ask the question, how do we get here? And in particular, I mean, how did the leaders of the Jewish nation become so angry at a person, their own brother, from their own nation, that they would ask a Gentile, a foreigner, to crucify this man on the cross? How did we get to this point? Why did the Jews, why did the chief priests and the Pharisees want to get rid of Jesus? To answer this question, we have to go back to when they first met. That was around 3 years ago, when Jesus first began his ministry. When Jesus started off, one of the first thing he did was he went to the temple. He made a whip of cords and he drove out all the businessmen and merchants and money changers at the temple. That was their first meeting. That didn't really go off on the right foot. You know, the temple was Jews' territory. They controlled the temple. They worked at the temple. Everybody respected the leaders at the temple. And they authorized business and stores and markets and merchants, everybody to be here. Come here, open store here at the temple. And people know you don't mess with the temple because you don't mess with the officials. And so when the Jews found out that there's this madman that was clearing out the temple, they went to find this man, only to hear him say, "Don't make my father's house a house of trade." Your father's house? You mean our father? Who are you? Why are you doing this? That was the first time they met. There was this other time when Jesus healed a man on Sabbath day. You know Sabbath day. No one works on Sabbath day. Sabbath was the Lord's day. And the leaders defined, gave you instructions, what you should do and what you shouldn't do. It was their day. They made the call. They defined the rules. You cannot do this work of this sort. You cannot heal this man of this sort. You cannot move this thing. But Jesus did it. And Jesus said to them, "My Father is working until now, and I am working." To which you're going to ask the same question, "Your Father?" The first time they heard this, they thought maybe they were going crazy or he was going crazy, but this time there's no mistake. This man is calling God his own father, the one that made the Sabbath. He's calling him his own father. He's making himself God. And the Jews have already decided at this point, this man needs to die. He is a blasphemer. Another day they met. They were talking about their ancestors, their history. And somehow the conversation brought to Abraham. They brought up Abraham. Abraham was their ancestor, the father of the Jews. Everybody knows this. But Jesus said, "Abraham rejoiced that he would see my day." Which is crazy considering Abraham died like hundreds and hundreds of years ago. And Jesus, this guy didn't even look like 50. So the Jews ask him, "How is it possible? You don't even look like you're 50. Then Jesus said, "Truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am." That was it. That's the final straw. I am who I am. That's God's name. This man was saying he's God. This man was saying he was alive before Abraham was, and he still is. And so at the moment, the Jews lost it. They picked up stones to throw at him, to stone him to death. Jesus hid himself and went to the temple. So back to now, at Pilate's headquarters. When the Jews brought Jesus to Pilate, they weren't without their reason. They haven't gone crazy. It was something that had been brewing for a long time. They just needed an opportunity. They said, "We have a law. And according to that law, he ought to die because he made himself the Son of God." And they weren't wrong. There is a law. So that's why they wanted to get rid of Jesus. Because he's calling himself the Son of God. But now that's not the whole picture. Why did they want to kill the Son of God? Weren't the Israelites and the Jewish people, weren't they expecting somebody? They were expecting a Messiah, yeah? They were well read in the scriptures. They know that God was sent a servant, a divine one at that, a divine servant. Chosen one, born of a virgin to save his people. He would come and he would do all this stuff. He would do signs, he would do miracles. People's eyes would be opened, the deaf would hear, and the lame is going to walk, and the dead will be raised. All of these signs Jesus did. That points to the fact that he is the Son of God. And I mean, the Jews and the chief priests was expecting this. They know this. They're not surprised that anybody here is going to be sent by God. Turns out, the Jews and the chief priests and the Pharisees wanted to kill Jesus, not because he was pretending to be the Son of God, but because he was the Son of God. They wanted to kill him not because he was a fraud, but because they knew deep down he was the one. Now, this still hasn't answered our question. Why do you want to kill the Son of God? Isn't the Son of God coming here good news? Isn't that the gospel? Isn't Messiah coming good news? You have been waiting for hundreds and hundreds of years. Turns out, some people saw Jesus as good news. Others saw him as a threat. When Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead, the Jews saw all this stuff, and the Jews asked themselves, what are we to do? This man performs many signs. If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him. And the Romans will come and take away our place and our nation. To the Jews and the Pharisees and the chief priests, the Son of God is a threat. Let me explain to you why. You have to understand this. Israel is a nation with one God. Everyone believed in the same God. Yahweh. And so since the old days, God set up a temple system for people to come to worship him, to connect and to pray to him. The temple is where God is. The closer you're to the temple, the better you are, the closer you are to God. God also appointed the special people, the priests, the Levites, to minister in the temple and minister to the people. They are the bridge. Now these priests and the Levites eventually became, you guessed it, the Pharisees and the scribes, and the leaders and the officials. They were special people. Special authority, special power at a special place for a special nation, for one special God. And so that lasted for a long time. Until later when the Romans came. The Romans conquered them. But arguably, their status didn't change much. Maybe they got better. Because when the Romans conquered their nations, they would allow the nations to continue to rule for themselves. And because they didn't want the nations to rebel. And so the Romans took an extra step even to please the Jewish people. What did they do? You have an old temple. The temple is important to you. I'm going to build it up for you. Why don't I expand it for you? Why don't I add some gold, add a little courtyard, make it like 10 times the size. And the temple eventually became an architectural wonder, a landmark, a tourist attraction. As long as the Israelites would behave properly and not rebel, as long as you pay the taxes, that's yours. The little dots is not dust in that picture. They are people. This is the size of 10 soccer fields. It's humongous. It's on the top of the mountain. The temple now isn't just the center of worship anymore. It's the center of everything. The marketplace is there. People's bank is there because people would say, you dare not to steal in God's temple, so they put the money in there. It's a place for socialization, a center for community, center for judgment. People would get judged there. People would get taught there. The laws would get passed there. Everything revolved around a temple. And you know, for the people that worked in the temple, what that means? Everything revolved around me. The people respected them. People paid them. People bowed to them. People listened to them. People followed them. Life was great. Life was normal. Life was very comfortable. And to those people, very comfortable people enjoying a certain level of special wealth and power and status, Son of God is a threat. The Son of God is a threat. Think about this. If people really believe that he's the Son of God and he is who he is, they don't need the temple anymore. They don't need to come here anymore. I mean, he already came and he ruined all your marketplace and your stores and stuff like that. What do you think will happen if you continue to let him do his thing? And what if Rome finds out he has a big following and then they will come away and take away everything? Think about this. What if this man, he says he's the Son of God and he does all the signs. What if he teaches stuff? What if he says stuff and people listen to him? What if they tell you, you don't need to go to the temple anymore. Come to me. You don't need to offer sacrifices. You don't even need to worship at Jerusalem. Meet at your own home. Start like local little groups. Go to local community centers. Rent the little building. Take time away from your life. You know what's important? Go to small group. Small group is important. Small group is important. Help out your local community is important. You don't have to go to the temple anymore. What if this Jesus guy, he tells the leaders, you guys have been in a high place for a while, but I tell you now, you have to learn to serve. How do you learn to serve? You wash the people's feet as they come in. Come early to the temple to put the chairs down. If you are a Jewish leader at this time where you walk in, people bow down to you and you're like, I ain't washing no feet. That's disgusting. And what if Jesus says, hey, you don't have to just give to the temple. You keep giving to the temple, but you give to other people now. Give to people that's like your own race, not your race. Give to people, be generous. Hold on a second. The other race? That's my money. My business. That's so controlling. What if Jesus now goes beyond the worship service, goes beyond the temple, and he starts stepping into your life? He's the Son of God. He can say things. What if taxes? You're all filing your taxes now. Honestly, he says, you file your taxes honestly. Don't lie. Don't cheat on your taxes. Give to the government what is the government's. To which you're going to think, the government is evil. They haven't done anything. My personal life, I have a financial advisor. That's what he's here for. Jesus, you're not my advisor. What if he teaches you about relationships? He teaches relationships. What if he tells you, don't sleep with somebody that you're not married to? Don't have multiple partners. To which you're going to say, hold on a second. This is Rome. Rome is a place of freedom. I get to do whatever I want. I have a partner for every single occasion, every single day. That's my personal life. He will teach you about work. What if Jesus, the Son of God, teach you about work? He would say, don't overwork. Don't make work your idol. Don't let money become your idol. In fact, give. Give and lay up treasures for yourself in heaven. What if he teach you about school, in life, in everything you do? Don't cheat. Don't lie. Don't take shortcuts. Honor God in everything you do. To which you're going to say, that is stepping too close to my life. That's my boundary. That's my, you know, my little bubble. My own life. Thanks very much. To some people, Jesus is good news. But to some, Jesus is a threat. Because if he's the Son of God, he will challenge your way of life. You don't get to say anymore. You can't be your own God anymore. And so the Pharisees and the chief priests, they saw Jesus as somebody to get rid of. Not because he's pretending to be the Son of God. It's precisely the opposite, because he is the Son of God. If you don't get rid of him, you will lose everything. You will lose your way of life. You will lose your temple. You will lose your nation, your freedom, your lifestyle, your relationship, your time. We don't need the Son of God. We are fine on our own. We want freedom. That's what we want. We want autonomy. So get him away, away with him, and crucify him. And so the Pharisees and the chief priests and the Jews and everybody who felt threatened by the Son of God, they cried out that early Friday morning and they said, crucify him, crucify him, crucify him, away with him. And so the people took him. They took him out of the temple. They took him out of the city. They took him out of their sight, took him out of their life to a little abandoned hill, and they got rid of him. When Jesus came as the Son of God, he's a threat that needs to be removed. But not everybody saw Jesus that way. You see, when John writes his gospel, he was very intentional in telling you the people's responses and how they differ or aligned with what Jesus says. Some people see Jesus as a judge that exposes their secrets, but Jesus says, I am the light. Follow me. Some people see Jesus as a showman that make bread out of nothing. But Jesus says, I'm the bread of life. Come to me. So in the same way, some people saw Jesus as a threat. But Jesus says something else. He is someone that you should hold on to, that you should cling on to, that you should be close to. Don't take me away. Be close to me. Jesus says, I am the vine, and you are the branches. Whoever abides in me, lives close to me, connected with me, and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. Jesus says, instead of taking me away, turning me away, casting me away, you have to cling to me, abide in me, live in me, be close and connected to me. Jesus, I'm not a threat to your life. I'm the source. I'm the source of real life. You remain close to me and you will bear fruit. I am the source. I'm not a threat. Jesus says, I'm the vine, you are the branches. You can't exist without me. You're not God. Stop trying to be like one. You're not meant to be autonomous, independent on your own. You're not meant to live without me, because apart from me, like a branch disconnected, you can do nothing. If you're on your own, you're going to wither. You're going to die. So don't throw me away. I mean, maybe better said, don't throw yourself away and connect to some junk. Why do you keep thinking that life is better without me? It's like branches that broke off from the plant and the vine and left it on the floor. It's dying. It's not fulfilling its purpose. Some of y'all, you are able to live for a little bit. Because why? Because the wind blew that little branch of yours and you are connected to a cement somewhere. And you found a little root and you're like, I am free. I am good here. I am free. But it's not going to last. I know you're afraid that when you get connected, when you lose that little cement place of yours, you're gonna lose some stuff. Your life might change. You have new rules, and you have the new people to follow, and now you have new commandments. So you think you're going to lose some stuff. But you know what I tell you it is? It's not losing stuff. It's called pruning. You know what pruning is? There is a vine dresser, a gardener. He takes care of the plants. And every branch that bears fruit, he prunes. He takes away junk and garbage. It's a process of removal so that you can grow. You think, I'm a threat. That's not a threat. I want you to grow. And I'm doing all of this. I'm doing this. I don't have bad intentions. I'm doing this out of love. I love you as my Father loves me. And I want you to be in this love. You keep thinking that, oh, I have new people to follow. There's the Son of God now, and there's new commandments. You keep thinking that's like you do these obedience stuff begrudgingly. But I tell you, You do them out of love. It's love. It's love. And I say all these things not to harm you, to make your life more miserable. I say this so you have joy. Not any kind of joy. My joy may be in you. That's what I want for you. Love and joy. Turns out when the Son of God came, some people saw him as a threat, a disruption to their already very steady life, someone to get rid of. But Jesus says something different. Jesus says, I'm not somebody to get rid of. You have to cling to me. I give you, I offer you something much better than your life right now. Before I talk anymore, give a good look at this list. There has to be one right one, right? There has to be a person that's correct. Who's the right one? I'll tell you what I think. Who got it right? Well, let's look at the Pharisees. This is what I'm thinking. You don't have to believe in this, but this is what I'm thinking. When I ask, are the Pharisees correct? I look at, well, what is the thing that they were hanging on to? The temple. Is the temple still here today? Nope. It was gone 40 years after they crucified Jesus. The thing that gave them all of their autonomy and wealth and power, and the thing that essentially made them God themselves, that thing is gone. Not one stone is upon another. Who's right? Who got it correct? Look at the other side. This is my opinion. I would trust the person that says he's going to die and he's going to come back to life. And he actually does it. That's who I trust. I would trust all of those eyewitnesses that is recorded in that book that you have. I would trust all the people that came before me in the churches. You know, I would trust the time when I met this man in prayer and in worship. I heard him. He's still I am. That's my two cents. The question is to you. Who is Jesus to you? Is he a threat? Or is he a source of life? Is he someone that you throw away? Get me out of here. Get rid of him. I don't want him. I don't want him in my life. Or is it somebody that you desperately cling on to? I'll tell you what I think. Given that I'm still alive this very moment and all of you are here, I don't think you're the very extreme. I don't think you want to crucify this man. But I think you're both. I think we're both. I think I'm both. A little bit of both. Sometimes I cling to him. Sometimes, honestly, I'd rather he's not here. You didn't tell me about this thing. Sometimes in areas of my life, I'm like, wow, he sustains me. Sometimes I lose so much because of you. And I understand that. So I have an invitation. I have a question for you. I have a question for you. If you are stuck in the middle, would you try, consider moving towards one side? Take the area of your life where you are the most autonomous. You don't want anybody to mess with you. What are they? Would you ask God and try and says, I want to trust you on that. For some of y'all, that's relationship. For some of you guys, it's work. For some of you guys, it's grades. Would you try it? Because, I mean, you have tried living that life on your own, right? You try being autonomous. You try being independent. In your relationships in the past, you have tried to take matters into your own hands. In your work, you have tried to advance it with everything that you got. In your life, you had tried to be in control of everything. But I have a question. Aren't you tired of that? To do what you're not made to do? To be God over your life? Aren't you tired of always being afraid of losing things? Aren't you tired of always feeling like I don't have enough stuff? I'm afraid the Roman government is going to come and take away my stuff. Jesus says, you don't have to live like that. You can hold on to me. You can be dependent on me. You can connect to me. And I promise you, as you connect more and more of your life to me, you will realize that's freedom. To let God be God. And you will realize as you're doing that, you're living in love and in joy. You know what that love and joy looks like? That looks like a gardener taking care of his plants, taking care of you. Every day he checks up on you. Are you okay? There's a little sprout came up. I didn't see that yesterday. Oh, there's a leaf. There's a new leaf. Oh, that part of you got a little yellow. Maybe I should do something about that. You know what love and joy looks like? The Father says, the soil is a little dry. You need some water. Let me get that to you right away. Or maybe the Father says, oh, there's all this junk. You're crowding up your space. I'm going to take them out. And the Father says, tomorrow is going to be windy. Storm is coming. Rain is coming. Let me build a little shelter for you. And you saw your plant. The whole part of your right side is withered. You're sick. Let me take care of you. When the harvest is here, he checks on you. You got any fruit? You got any fruit coming out of you? You do. I'm so happy. I'm so glad. That's living in love. Living under the care of God, the gardener, connected to God himself. Church, my question for you is, would you consider move towards Jesus' picture? Believe in what he says. I am the true vine. My Father is the gardener. You only need to be branches. Don't throw me away. Don't throw yourself away. Connect. Abide in me. Let's pray together. Church, as we conclude the message, I want to give you space. I want to give you time. Is there some parts of your life where you think or you have thought, I don't want God to step into these. I don't want God to interfere with this. I don't want God to take over this stuff. Have there been areas like this? And today you think, maybe it's better I let God be God. Would you in your prayer lift up these to him?